this week. And this is just a really wonderful, beautiful human being. This man has the most incredible mind, and I love speaking with him, and you're going to love him too. His name is Peter Canova. He is the author of the award-winning thriller. This is an incredible novel, Hope Annalisa. I hope some of you have picked it up and read it. If you haven't, you definitely need to get out there to www.hopeannalisa.com and pick this book up. And I'm really excited because I spent a little bit of time chatting with Peter and getting to know him. And he's just wonderful. He has this deep, profound awareness of the sacred feminine energy that kind of lives within all of us. I mean, certainly in our culture and in our hearts and in our world. And he's so familiar with it from a historical point of view. So it's absolutely fascinating and how that's come down through the cultures and through the ages and into our culture today and how that's living and how that's surviving or not. And it's also very feared in our culture, as some of you know. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and how that's worked its way into this beautiful book that he has written, this absolutely fascinating book. And so, Peter, say hello. Welcome.
Well, thanks, Haley. It's great to be with you today.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Good. So, Peter, talk to us a little bit about Hope Annalisa. I want to give the audience a little background on you because you just as a person are extremely fascinating. And now that you're writing this trilogy, you know, we're going to get to share you with the whole world and not keep you all to ourselves, those of us that know you and love you. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to write this book. And let's back up to when you were, in your early 20s, maybe around 23, I think you were discovered that you were gifted medical intuit. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, let me give you the quick version of my life because we have a lot of interesting things to speak about today. But yes, when I was in my early 20s, I discovered some abilities to do intuitive medical readings. And from there, it went on to different aspects, I guess, of what you call psychic or spiritual phenomena, depending on your point of view. But it really led me, it was startling for me, because I didn't really necessarily have any inkling in my earlier life that this would be part of my life, except for the fact that I guess you could always say I was a seeker. I always felt that there was something behind the veil of this world, and I didn't know what it was, and it made me uncomfortable. So I did a lot of reading and thinking on these matters. But when I actually experienced the ability to understand what was going on inside of a person who might be tens of thousands of miles away, and the only information I was given was a name, age, and address, it really led me to a profound feeling that we are all connected by something at an unseen level. There is an unseen energy that binds us all together, that allows us, that gives us information, that gives us guiding information. And that was a great source of comfort to me, because prior to that, I probably was in the situation that a lot of people are, which is that we're brought up at best, we're brought up on faith, and faith in the unseen, or faith beyond something, beyond the material world, is a proposition that we take secondhand from church as our parents or whatever, and it's more of an intellectual proposition. But when I had these experiences, they were directly touching this energy, and this energy was providing me information that I could never have known otherwise. And that helped me graduate from faith to knowledge of the fact that there is something very profound beyond us and that we are part of it. And that really set the latter course of my life, and probably was the platform that I used eventually to develop this book and this trilogy, Hope Annalisa and the First Souls.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. It is so true that we're all connected by this unseen energy. And what is beautiful about what you say is that you find comfort in that. And I think so many of us in this culture today, we run from that, right? We have a great fear of what's that going to mean for me, and is that going to make me responsible for something? And I think we tend to run from it instead of finding this finding this energy to be comforting and something that can guide us to what is greater for us in our life.
And that's a great point, Haley. That's a great point, Haley. And that's the reason why we end up with religion, essentially, is because, you know, it's easier to give over responsibility for our own spiritual growth and spiritual knowledge to other people that be. And you walk into a church and you get absolved. You go to confession, you get absolved by the priest. That's pretty much the way it's been. There is a responsibility that comes with spiritual growth, but the rewards also are very great. And I think at the end of the day, at the end of each of our lives, it's something that we probably will face at some point, and I think to be armed with some knowledge base of what is beyond is a comforting thing for people. So, you know, it does mean responsibility, but like I say, the payoff is a big payoff.
It is a huge payoff, as it was for you with Pope Annalisa. So let's talk about that. As you started studying and researching, hi, have a seat. You're welcome to sit up and listen to the show. Peter, we've had a guest join us here in the bookstore. So I think she got a little interested, or she's reading a book. She said, oh, I'm interested, Bob. Well, we're going to have to get a book in your hands, a Pope Annalisa. Anyway, Peter, talk to us a little bit about the history and how you went about researching for Pope Annalisa and this feminine energy that flows through the book and comes through as such this powerful character, Pope Annalisa, and give us too a little bit about how you formed this character. I mean, she's amazing to me, and I don't quite understand how did she come to into being in your brain and in your life and onto the page.
Well, again, let's say it started with that platform of a spiritual orientation I had, and I happened to be sitting in a screenwriting class many years ago, and the instructor came in and said, I want you all to bring in an idea that nobody has ever done before, a high-concept idea. Well, that's a pretty tall order. I think almost everything we do in life is a little bit of a ripoff of something else that happened before it. But my mind started thinking in this way. I said, well, what haven't we seen? We haven't seen a female as a priest, and certainly not as a pope. And then I kind of jumped on that idea, and I said, well, what would the world be like? What would this person be like to be able to become a pope in an institution that has been strictly male for 2,000 years? And what would the conditions in a world be like that would allow that to happen? So I started asking a series of questions like that, and I built on it. And frankly, the book was really a result of, yes, it was a result of a tremendous amount of 25 years of research into ancient mystic traditions, into the Catholic Church, into really so many historical features of the book. But just as much of the book was channeled information that I was receiving at the time. And the book was developed over a period of about 10 years. But during that 10 years, for the most part, I was working in international business. I was an international hotel developer with my own company and with a couple of partners. So I was literally spending most of my life on an airplane, and I would develop little scenes and snippets of the book while I was on the plane or when I had a spare moment. In fact, I wrote the book backwards. I visualized the end of the book first, and then I wrote it backwards from there. And the real formative part of the book, though, was probably in the last 3 or 4 years, and my wife came down with, was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I took off about a year from work to take care of her, and during that time, it was a very emotional period. I think I was telling you, you know, over the show, I was just channeling this incredible information, burning out computers. I burnt out half a dozen computers in the space of 2 weeks with the electrical energy I was giving off, but I received this incredible information, actually, a couple of things were the predictions of the first two Gulf Wars, which were originally part of the plot line that I wrote out when they happened. And I said, well, I don't want the book to be dated. And then finally I said, okay, well, you know, we're going to do a plot line here where America is in a nuclear confrontation with Iran, a country that has just recently gone nuclear. And then lo and behold, what do we see today? So I said, finally, I'm not going to rewrite this thing. I'm just going to let it go to press as it is. I'm tired of rewriting it. But it was a lot of channeled information coming through, as well as a blend of the research that I did to produce the book.
That is, wow. You kind of blew me away there. a lot of information there, Peter. That is really fascinating. And I'm sorry, I'm a little sidetracked. We have a lot of people stepping up and interest in what you have to say today. So this is really, I'm really excited about it. And you guys have any questions for Peter as you were listening? No? No, that's okay. They're all shaking
maybe they will as we go along. I'm happy to take questions.
So you took this time off. You're writing this book. You decided, okay, now I have the time, you know. God's called me to sit down, take some time in my life, take care of my wife, get out of corporate America, and now I'm going to write this book and live my dream. So how did this shift come for you energetically and psychically that you started kind of channeling in this sacred feminine? Let's talk about that and where that lives in you and how you're able to bring that forth in a consciousness through the book.
Mm-hmm. Very good question. It almost happened to me unconsciously. In fact, I think the book was a way of getting something that was in my subconscious out into the conscious world. At the time, I didn't really realize it, but there was, I believe, there has been what I would call kind of an increase that's happened over the past decade in a consciousness surrounding the sacred feminine. And the rise of, let's say, of a female energy that I think is coming into the world to help us rebalance our world. Now, I couldn't have consciously articulated that for much of the time that I was formulating the book, but essentially that's what my subconscious was telling me. And sort of an example of that, a paradigm of that, was that when I started the book, Mary Magdalene, who plays a prominent role in the trilogy, more so in the second book, The 13th Disciple, than in the first book, Pope Annalisa. But throughout the trilogy, Mary Magdalene plays an important role. And when I started my research, there was very, very little about her around. All of a sudden, during the course of, after 4 or 5 years, there was an explosion of material on Mary Magdalene, people coming out with books, articles, theories, you name it. Then, of course, you had the Da Vinci Code, and she was a character in that. And I think that Mary Magdalene, the whole consciousness around Mary Magdalene, was sort of a focal point as of her as an archetype for this feminine energy that I believe has been coming into the world. And I'm a person who likes to get into basics. So let me speak for a second, if I can, about the sacred feminine, because
yeah,
I think that. Yeah, I think that what happens a lot of time is that and language has a veil to it, because we all project our own meanings on language, and sometimes we're not always speaking in the same direction. And I kind of like to get to the bedrock, so I'd like to just share for a minute with the listeners how I view the sacred feminine, what it means to me, and also how I think it has expressed itself both energetically and through history, and how it's expressing itself now. But the sacred feminine is simply the recognition that God expresses itself in a female aspect as well as a male one. And although God is one energy, divine unity expresses itself as two fundamental aspects in our visible universe. And I think all of us know the yin and yang and so forth. But these polarities are one energy with different vibrations expressing itself with different characteristics. And from time immemorial, these aspects were described in the ancient text as being male and female. Now, our own brain structure reflects this condition. So, as that old famous Hermetic adage, as above, so below, well, it's expressed in our own physical brain structure. The left brain, and many people may be familiar with the left brain or right brain theories, but the left brain or the male side has to do with function and analysis. It's the part of us that employs analytical thought, which breaks things into component parts. It uses logic and verbalized language to perceive and express itself. So it's really the basic thought mode for things like science and math. Now, on the other side, you have the right brain or the female side, and that has to do with design and creativity. And it employs holistic thought, which actually looks for unity in the parts, not the other way around, not for the parts and the unity, but the unity in the parts. So it uses intuition and creativity to perceive and express itself, and it's the basic thought mode behind things like art and philosophy. And all of us possess both sets of these characteristics. It's not like the male means that, all males are like this and all females are like that. We all possess the right brain and the left brain, the male and female characteristics within ourselves, but we don't express them equally. So that's why we have artists on one hand and scientists on the other, psychics on one hand and skeptics on the other. And we also don't express these energetic forces within us in a balanced way, which is why we have internal and external conflicts. So the ancient wisdom tells us that there was a chain of events that caused the physical creation, and that was led by the feminine aspect of God. And in fact, many ancient societies held that the earth was alive with the seeds planted by the divine mother, the earth mother, who became Gaia, or the world soul. Many of you may have heard of the Gaia theory, that the world is actually, our earth is actually sentient, alive. And most cultures and religions from the early days worshipped the goddess who expressed itself in nature as the earth mother. But there were seeds inherent in the ancient creation story itself that caused the world eventually to tilt in the opposite direction. And how that happened is a whole other story we probably don't have time for. But we ended up with this patriarchal world we have today that has ignored, suppressed, and, you know, kind of disdained the whole feminine divine and everything that goes with it. And this attitude largely has been reflected in the societies and religions of the past 2,000 years. So finally today, I think, especially in the last decade, maybe leading up to 2012, we see a rising consciousness now and seeking out of the sacred feminine and people attempting to recover the spirit of the sacred feminine. And this isn't about political feminism or equal pay. Those are like superficial manifestations of this deeper energy. I think the real message here is the recovery of our intuitive and feeling nature to take its rightful place at the side of our logical and analytical nature. And this will produce a fully balanced, actualized human being. So what this really means is that the sacred feminine in today's context is really about transformation of personal and collective consciousness by this rebalancing that opens up information from essentially the spiritual realm for us to better understand our material reality.
Okay, I'm digesting that just a little bit. The women sitting here are shaking their heads, yes. We're digesting what you said. Okay, so if you think this is going to take us to a different reality, how do you feel that it, how are you seeing it being played out in humanity today? I mean, are you seeing this coming out in our psyche, and how is it moving into the soul of humanity? That's what I'm most interested in, you know, how is it moving into the soul of humanity? I mean, Pope Annalisa, in your book, she has a tremendous effect on everybody that she touches, and in a changing culture and changing the political views. So how do you see that? Do you feel like that is coming forth in our culture?
I think it's coming forth in every culture, and I think it's coming forth on all fronts. I mean, on one hand, you see people moving away from religion because they've seen a lot of divisions with religion. Everybody seems to have the right answer and the only answer in religion, and I think you see people thirsting for a more spiritual solution that transcends religions, which is a lot what Pope Annalise is about. But just look on a mass mind level. Look at the success of the Da Vinci Code. Now, that wasn't even a particularly spiritual book at all, but I think it what the Da Vinci Code tapped into and why it became so popular was that there is a thirst that people have for alternative spiritual visions, because so much of what we've developed up until now has turned into a dead end. It hasn't really answered personal questions for people in a way that's meaningful for their lives, and it certainly hasn't answered questions in the world at large when, you know, we see everything going on around us, war, depressions, and everything else. And I think that humanity goes through a growth, just like a child goes through a growth. And maybe in the time, in biblical times, people weren't really ready to receive a transmission of a message that some of the light bringers were talking about back then. But I do think humanity has spiritually matured. And I think a lot of people who would have been skeptics 10 or 20 years ago are just a lot more open to these messages today. And I certainly think if you talk to the younger people, they just seem to be light years ahead of us in terms of these types of understandings, that at least, you know, when I was their age, when I was in, you know, my teens, my early 20s or whatever, the culture has just advanced so much that I think people are ready to recognize some of these spiritual messages that we've been speaking of.
Right, and I think it kind of goes beyond, if we were to speak more at a quantum level, you know, it kind of goes beyond even the culture advancing, right? I think energetically, we're seeing some opening coming in, and as you say, these younger people, I mean, these children are far advanced in the way that they think, the way that they feel, the way that they interact with one another. They're not really interested in, you know, what you look like, what color you are, where you come from, you know, what your age is. They're interested in what your wisdom is and what you have to share and where that comes from you on an intuitive level. They're so incredibly intuitive. It is blowing me away as well. I've been kind of watching this phenomenon, and I don't want to get sidetracked here, but this phenomenon of all these children being diagnosed with autism, and I think these children are just extremely gifted, and they're bringing in an energy into our world that's allowing us to be able to question, as you say, or reach for something beyond what we can see. I mean, you talk about it in a context of thirsting for something that we can't put into context. And I think people are finally starting to feel that energy is also vibrating within themselves, right? And
yeah.
We can't buy into. We cannot buy into anymore that everything is going to be okay, because the world is appearing to us as though it's falling apart right now. So we've got to find that from within, because it certainly doesn't live outside of ourselves.
Well, seeking answers in economics and politics and sociology hasn't really answered the questions for us. I think that people are more and more impatient with their governments for some of the things that are happening right now that are affecting them, and we're certainly economically being greatly impacted in this country right now. I think that we've been involved in wars for the last decade or so, and so whatever the traditional solutions have been just aren't solving the problems, and so I think that people are smart enough right now that they say, you know what, maybe we need to bring some information from a higher plane, a higher vantage point, and kind of get out of the forest here. And I think that's what's happening. I think more and more people are migrating from the forest up the hill to kind of really get a perspective on what's going on and do something about it. And I think that's encouraging. And, you mentioned something about the young kids. I mean, so many of them now are being diagnosed with ADHD and given drugs, and I often kind of wonder, I think I probably had ADHD when I was a kid, because I think it was my mind thinking simultaneously on multiple levels. So, yeah, sometimes I had trouble concentrating on the mundane, rote stuff, and I'm not saying it's bad. I mean, you need to function in this world. But I also really kind of wonder how much of that is really, children thinking simultaneously on multi-levels and, then saying, well, we can't have that, and then they're being drugged.
Right, right. And I think if you're thinking in simultaneous levels, you're also living in simultaneous realities, right? This can be really confusing to kind of be living the past and future all at the same time. That's a huge concept to understand, and it's not the point of our show today, but we should have you back, and we should talk about that concept. And I remember coming into it, in my mid-20s, and my teacher blew me away when she said, I want you to go to bed tonight, and I want you to ask your guides bring a dream to you and show you how you live in all these realities at the same time. I'm like, oh my Lord. Mm-hmm. So I did, and it blew me away for several years coming into that energy, because it was coming into that energy field and that vibration where I could live there, right, and still live in the world. So,
well, it's amazing you had a teacher that would even pose that kind of a question. Your teacher was far more advanced than anybody I went to school with.
Oh, well, you know what? I took a class at the Jungian Institute in Austin, Texas, and that's what she was teaching. So, a little Jungian at heart all my life. So, anyway, well, how can folks begin to transcend? I mean, how can we, we're still living in this traditional patriarchal society with all these religious teachings. And they've been ingrained into our psyche and our cellular memory for centuries. And your book points that out. Your book brings that down through the centuries. And your book is a shift. There's a huge shift with Pope Annalisa. And so what is your advice on how we can come to know at a more deeply intuitive soul level this oneness with God, right, this energetic source of the Creator, and how we can live that in our lives and begin to make shifts in the world?
It's not an easy question to answer, because there's no one single answer to it. I think much of it really depends on where a person is, because just like we're in different grades in school, we're also in different grades in terms of maturing our spiritual consciousness. But to try and answer in a general sense, I'd say a couple of things. First of all, I think the main thing to build on is if you have a core feeling of alienation, if you have a core feeling of being uncomfortable with yourself and the world, something inside you is kicking you to seek. And you probably won't find the answers at the universities, in politics, economics, religion may give you some glimpses of insight, but religions tend to stop at a certain level and kind of box you in there and put a halt on your road to spiritual growth. But the one thing that you can do is something that we said, which is to take responsibility. Now, taking responsibility for your spiritual growth can take a lot of different avenues. It can start out by going to group meetings, by talking with people, by finding books to read, by listening to Haley Wiseman's show. Any number of things that will start to acquaint you with looking at yourself and society and reality in a different way. That's probably the first step, is that kind of seeking. If you really have a fervent desire and you learn to go within yourself through meditation or some other means to quiet yourself and quiet your mind with an objective in mind of making contact with a higher information, if you fervently want that, and at the very least, let's say you take it as an article of faith that there is something higher out there to be contacted, even though that may not have happened to you yet, eventually you will make contact with something larger than yourself. I can pretty much promise you that. The thing is that you have to be diligent about it, and it's something that has to come from your heart. So I think to really transform yourself, it begins from the heart, which is the sacred feminine. It's a feminine quality. Heart-based feeling as opposed to mind-based thinking. Now, the mind can intellectually tell you, I want to change and I'm going to give myself a direction to change, but unless the heart is working in unison, you don't get anywhere. And incidentally, I think this is a mistake that a lot of so-called New Age people make there seems to be a feeling that if you want to change your life, you sort of, you know, go into meditation and you got these affirmations and you repeat to yourself, I am this, I will that, and so forth. But see, you're only using the male part of your energy that way. That's the logical, verbalized, directive part. And that's great for identifying your goal. But the fuel to get you there is the female desire, the heartfelt desire to want to have that change and experience something bigger than yourself. And if you merge those two streams within yourself, if you work to merge those two currents, it can be transformative.
Beautifully said. Peter, you're the best person on the planet to ask that question of. Beautifully said. Thank you. So, okay. If you could share one piece of soul advice with our listeners, what would it be? I'm running out of time, and I want to talk to you for the next hour and a half, so I'm going to have you back on the show. So tell our listeners, share a little piece of soul advice.
You know, I wouldn't give you any other soul advice than what we just discussed, because I think the message of Pope Annalisa is that everybody has the ability to have the same transformative experience and contact with this divine wisdom that I experienced. And at that point, again, we tend not to take life on faith anymore. We're armed with a base of knowledge, because it's an experience we've actually had. Once you make it your own by experience, it stays with you for the rest of your life. So you're not operating a theoretical life anymore. You're operating a real life. And I think that that's probably the message of the book, which is that we're so much more than we realize. We are sparks of the divine that are here to experience. We're like the fingers of God, here to touch the face of the material world and bring that experience of materiality back to spirit, and at the same time to reawaken ourselves to our spiritual nature. And that's really what this book is about. It's within our grasp. We can do it. If you set your heart and mind in that direction, you can do it. And that would be my message. And in parting, I might just say one thing. Pope Annalisa is not yet on bookshelves all over the country. It is on some, but you can order it through almost any bookstore. So the folks in your store, if they talk to the people at the cash register, can probably find it through the Ingram or Baker & Taylor databases. It should be on the computer. So I think almost anybody can order it from any store or on Amazon.com. If you go to the search bar, just type in Pope Annalisa, and it should be right there for you.
Yeah, and I was sitting here like, banging my head on the table that I left my book at home so people can't see the cover. But if you log into Blog Talk Radio, if you've just joined us, you'll see there on the homepage of the show today, you can also click there, Blog Talk Radio. Pope Annalisa, the book cover is right there on my radio show page, right up there in the right-hand corner, Peter, and people can click there and order it as well. And are you doing a book signing somewhere soon? Are you up in the Cape right now?
You know, I kind of divide my time in the summer times between my home in Florida and here on Cape Cod, where I happen to be right now. You know, I have found I don't do very many book signings anymore. When I do an event like that, it's usually centered around a larger event where I'll come into a place and there'll be some advertisement and I'll speak, and then after the speaking engagement, then I'll do the book signing. But in terms of just going into the bookstores just for a pure signing, I haven't been doing as much of that simply because, well, you know, I think when the people coming in, they don't know what the book is about. It's really hard for them to, you know, want to pick up the book. So I'm trying to do a little bit of, well, like we're talking here now, I'm trying to do a little bit of that beforehand in a speaking engagement, the areas I go in, and then have the book signing afterwards.
Oh, perfect. Well, we'll keep putting you out there. And so tell us, I want you to give us a little glimpse into the next book in this trilogy, because Pope Annalisa, I mean, you know, it's just the first book in the trilogy. And tell me the name of the trilogy again. It just went out of my brain because I'm still thinking about what you said a while ago.
Yeah, the trilogy is called the First Souls Trilogy, and it's about the first souls to incarnate into material experience. It's about the first fall of spirit from the higher dimensions into materiality, and it traces their lives. These spirits are archetypical. They're us. They're the story of us. They're the story of our origin, destiny, and purpose on this earth, and it traces their lives over different epochs of history. So the book, the second book is called The 13th Disciple, and The 13th Disciple, unlike the first book, which takes place in the year near future, the year 2025, the second book actually cuts back and forth between lives in the biblical period and at the time of the Christ in Palestine and the year 2025, and it talks about it gets into the origins of the first souls as they appear in the first book. It goes back and traces their origins and what made them what they are, how they progressed, how they developed, and what happens to them. So we kind of get watch this baby grow, in effect.
Well, beautiful. I can't wait to get my hands on a copy. You'll have to, I promise not to leave my first signed copy on the plane again and ask for another.
Happens to everybody. I've done that many times. The way I look at it is it's good advertisement. Someone else will pick up that book and will circulate.
Well, that's what I thought. I said, well, you know, the best thing that comes from this is somebody's going to get a signed copy of this novel, and they're going to go, wow, this is really cool, and they're going to tell a friend, and they're going to tell a friend. So I just meant to be.
That's right. And if they change their name to Haley, then the universe will truly be in balance.
Yeah, maybe it'll come back to me. Won't that be neat?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really, really cool. Well, Peter, thank you for joining us. Oh, good. We had a wonderful guest here, and she went to put some more money in her meter. Peter, she just loves what you're talking about, and she keeps shaking her head yes. And do you have a question for Peter? We have another guest here today live in the store. You don't? He's just listening. I shouldn't have asked him. I put him on the spot. He is sitting kind of far back, so that would be the indication I should leave him alone. Peter, thank you so much for sharing. I want to, let's bring you back. Let's look at the schedule for later in the summer, early fall, and let's bring you back and let's talk more about the book itself. But I really wanted to get out there to folks how this energy is shifting in our world, and we're coming more into this divine, and that is the key, what you say, that if you can connect, that it really doesn't matter, you know, who you are, if you're male or you're female, if you can connect with that heart energy, and we all have a heart, we all have heart energy, that's where our joy lives, that's where our faith lives, and then if you can connect with that, and as you say, if you have a true desire to connect with that energy, you will. And then I'd like to add one thing that you pointed out, in my words, would be that you put action behind that. So you choose, as you're saying, meditation or whatever practice it is that you can bring into your life every day and start connecting with, I love how you said this, I wrote it down, your objective in your mind is to connect with a higher consciousness, and you will. You said, yeah, I can promise you will make contact. And I second that promise because I do every day. I talk to the fifth dimension of light constantly. So thank you for imparting that to us and bringing that through in your book, that we all have that ability. And, you know, one thing about Annalisa, I'm not completely finished reading the book, but one thing that I find so powerful about her is that she believes in herself regardless, and she knows that her gifts are authentic and true. And she goes up against all these different powers that be, and she stands in herself always. And I think she must do that by coming back to her heart and knowing that she comes from spirit and it's not the other way around.
I think that's beautifully put.
Thank you. Okay, Peter. Have a beautiful day. And you're welcome to remain on the line. Sometimes we have callers that call in and ask about the guest. And if you'd like to stay on, that's great. If you have other things to do, we won't keep your time. You're welcome to drop.
I just want to say thank you for having me today. I enjoyed being with you and the listeners. And, yeah, I would look forward to coming back and speaking with you all sometime down the road.
Yes, we'll have you back on. And I want everybody to go out there. I want you to check this website out. If you've just joined us, we've been speaking with Peter Canova. He is the author of the award-winning novel Pope Annalisa. You can find that at www.popeanalisa.com. You can find it on Amazon. You can type it in, like Peter says, right in your Google toolbar. It'll come up, Pope Annalisa. I mean, this book has just won 2 silver and 1 gold Nautilus Award, as well as the Independent Publishers Award for Fiction. Wonderful, wonderful book. It is the first in the trilogy, The First Soul, which chronicles the first awakening of spirit into materiality in the form of human consciousness. These books are thrillers. They're incredible. They're wonderful. Pick it up. And we look forward to hearing from you again, Peter, and having you back. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. Goodbye.